Welcome to Grid Talk, a series of conversations with the leaders and innovators shaping the 21st century grid. Hosting the podcast is Marty Rosenberg, an award-winning energy journalist. The series is sponsored by the Department of Energy's Office of Electricity Advanced Grid Research Division. Now, here's Marty Rosenberg with Grid Talk.
Hi, and welcome to Grid Talk. Today, we're very pleased to have with us Kramer Ockley, who's with the U.S. Department of Energy in their Fusion Energy Science program. He's a program manager, and he's very involved in a news story that came out that many of you may have noticed in December about the Department of Energy funding three laser fusion research hubs. And we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of what that means. Welcome, Kramer. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
So first, I'm going to ask you for a definition. You don't have to get too far in the weeds with us, but you're manager of the government's Inertial Fusion Energy Science Program. What is meant by inertial fusion science?
Yeah, so basically, inertial fusion energy is a fusion where you use the inertia of the fuel to confine it. So the other way is the magnetic fusion where you use magnets to confine it. So this is a different concept.
Okay. So listeners to Grid Talk know that we were excited a year ago to have Annie Critcher from Lawrence Livermore talk about her breakthrough in fusion research, specifically in ignition. And that was a year ago, and we're very pleased to have you, Kramer, to give us an update on this, which is an announcement that the Department of Energy is starting three different projects to further the work that Annie and her team did. Can you describe what's going to be happening at Lawrence Livermore, Colorado State, and the University of Rochester?
Yes. So just for clarification, so there are two programs. There is the Fusion Energy Sciences program, And the inertial fusion energy, it's a new program within FES. But there is the ICF program. The ICF program is stewarded by the National Security Administration. And that's been going on for decades. So what we are doing from the fusion part is we are leveraging the basically the results from National Ignition Facility to advance fusion for energy applications. And we established three hubs. It was a competitive process, and these hubs are geographically distributed throughout the U.S., one on the West Coast at Livermore, the other one on the East Coast in New York, and the third one is in the Midwest at Colorado State University.
So at the outset, you mentioned the difference between inertial and the use of magnets. I was at the Elysee Palace in 17 years ago, in March of 2007, when they launched the ITER project of seven nations. And there they're using magnets to contain the fusion project. So we have the United States backing that effort. It's one of the seven, as well as this effort. Could you describe which do you think is going to be more successful, or do you have no way of knowing? I mean, they're twin paths. They're very different. Why is the Department of Energy even trying this different path if it's involved in ITER and committed to that path?
I think it's hard to tell at this point. It's too early to tell which concept will go forward and be successful. So the more diverse a portfolio you have, the better the risking and also the increased likelihood of success. So basically, you know, the U.S. is involved in magnetic fusion program, including the ITER, including other tokamaks. But IEVE today does not have a house in the U.S. We never had an IEVE program. And because of the result of the National Ignition Facility, where for the first time ever, as humans, we can actually get more energy out of the fuel than we put in, if you remember, it's 1.5 gain, and actually they repeated the experiment, and they went up to almost to 2, about 1.9. So I think as a science develops and technology develops, I think parallel path and diversification is so important.
So, I mean, there's a lot of science here. I don't want people to lose the poetry of it as well. So I'm going to quote briefly what Annie had to say about what what's actually happening here. This is Andy speaking. What we're doing here is essentially creating a miniature star in a lab about the size of a human hair to half the size of a human hair. We have 192 giant lasers. And when we say giant, that means the whole system that is used to create this energy and all the details associated with it, it's the size of 3 football fields when you put all of the 192 laser beams together. That's quite an experiment.
That is true.
And where is that going now? Give us a sense. And just also to give context, the DOE is putting a heavy emphasis on fusion. While these 3 programs we're discussing today are $42 million, DOE is spending $500 million a year on fusion. So this is a major emphasis, and there's a lot of consensus in the world that renewables, while important, are not sufficient, and some kind of nuclear energy will have to play a backup role. And just to get it stated for the record, the promise of fusion is it's inherently safer and less radioactive waste generating than what we know of as nuclear. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
So talk about what Annie did and where this is going now, because you talked about the desirability of getting more energy output for energy input. That's the name of the game here.
Yes.
How will these 3 fusion projects help move us along that?
Yeah, that is a really very good question. So these 3 national labs, you know, they have lead institutions, but they bring together more than 30 institutions from national labs, universities, and private sector to tackle some of these challenges. So, and the challenges you can kind of put it in 3 areas. One is the driver, the second one is the target, and the third one is the subsystems. The driver is what you use to deliver, you know, energy to your fuel. And in this case, it's either laser or ion beam or some other device. For example, for the National Ignition Facility, we used laser beams to deliver a lot of energy, that 2 megajoules of energy into this target and get 3 megajoule out. So what is the challenge for us to make this IFA relevant? So the National Ignition Facility is a scientific facility that was built with 90s technology, and it was built for specific purpose for the national security mission. If you want to do this for energy applications, we need a laser that is more efficient. Just to give you an example, the laser that the National Ignition Facility, you start with 400 units of energy to get 2 units to the target. Today, if we were to build the same laser, there is a technology that's 10% efficient. So instead of starting with 400 megajoules, you can start with only 30 or 20 megajoules. So, and we have to do it at a repetition rate. And that's really the game, is trying to take the science from the inertial confinement and do it at a high repetition rate that is relevant for, let's say, energy production in the future. And that's what the hubs will be doing.
So one of the things, and again, I'm a journalist, I'm not a scientist, you're going to be pulsing this energy at 10 pulses a second. That's not something that was done in the initial experiment a year ago. That's moving
one shot a day. Yeah.
So
that was one shot a day.
And you're going to move that to 10 pulses a second?
Well, that's what the hubs are going to be working on. So the hubs will be working on laser technology, for example, that will allow us to make big lasers that will operate, let's say, at 1 shot per second or 10 shot per second.
So the article that I referenced, where I found you in the New York Times in November, quotes from Tammy Ma, the plasma physicist at Lawrence Livermore, as saying, "I think at the end of 4 years, we can lay out a promising path forward for the U.S. to really demonstrate a full-scale pilot plant." Now, the rap against fusion is, everybody has said for decades, it's a decade off. Do you think it's getting closer now? And do you think this effort that you're involved with at these 3 institutions will make this happen faster than decades from now?
Yeah, I think this is a really good question. And, you know, people always ask, when is fusion going to be here? And the answer is not straightforward. But really, we are very optimistic, and for the following reasons. So, for the first time in history, we have demonstrated that ignition, and you can gain out of the target. And there were breakthrough in magnetic fusion in magnets that you can get superconducting magnets. Additionally, what we have today that we didn't have like 5 or 10 or 20 years ago is we have a private sector. So there are more than 50 companies that are pursuing fusion energy, and they have attracted more than $6 billion in investment. And also the government are starting to take fusion a little bit seriously by having roadmaps. For example, the U.S. has the bold decadal vision that was announced by the White House. The U.K. has their roadmap and other countries. So it's promising.
So what is the U.S. roadmap? Can you tell us a little more?
So basically, the U.S., the White House put in this roadmap for the development of commercial fusion energy within like 10 years or so. And the idea is to have partnership between the private sector and the public to advance concepts for different fusion pilot plants. And last year, or a couple of years ago, we had awarded about, I think it was 8 awards for 8 different companies that have different concepts. And now we'll be working kind of together with the government. It's a milestone-based program similar to what the NASA did with SpaceX at smaller scale.
So also in the New York Times, it quotes you as saying that these three institutions, Lawrence Livermore, Rochester and Colorado, were some of many applicants that you reviewed for this $42 million seed funds. Give us a sense of the ecosystem that's developing in universities. You said there are many. I think you used the words 30 or more.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this a hotbed of research for the most promising young scientists out there?
Absolutely. And what we are doing is we're developing a framework. Actually, we have a name for it. It's called the IFE STAR, IFE Science and Technology Accelerated Research. And the idea is to have a framework where, in addition to the hubs, we can have smaller institutions from our field and from other fields join in to solve some of the challenging problems. We want to build bridges between the bigger institution and smaller institution. And we want to actually go beyond fusion. We want to go to other areas that, like material scientists, that could have solutions for us, or AI and machine learning, or any other disciplines that are not working in fusion, but they might have something to contribute.
So, talk a little bit about the companies that are starting to merge in this space. How many are there? Who's active? Who are the people that are funding it?
Yeah, so basically for fusion in general or concept, I think there were more than 40 companies. For inertial fusion energy, there is like 6 or 7 companies, and at least 3 or 4 of them are part of our national hubs. So there will be a really good partnership between the IFE private sector and the IFE hubs.
Mm-hmm. What's your job going to be in administering this $42 million? How will you set it up? What would you judge to be success? What would you judge to be failure?
Yeah, I think my job is to try to bring the community to work together. Historically, because this is multidisciplinary field, it's really hard for, sometimes there is like a red tape or people don't know about each other. So my job is really to make sure that there is a framework that where people can collaborate on areas of common interest, because we want to avoid duplication. But if there is a challenging problem that is common, if we can put more brains on it and more resources, then we have a chance of having an idea of on that technology, on that science, like we did 4 or 5 years, so then we can move to the next step.
So I want to ask you a question that really doesn't rely on your day-to-day responsibilities, but you're a lot closer to fusion than all of us, most of us listening. And a year ago when I talked to Annie, I also talked to somebody at ITER who generally described fusion and said the physics don't allow a meltdown or that kind of thing. You can place it in fact, place it in greater proximity to cities, to industry, if you get the regulatory authorities to agree. Tell us how fusion, when it arrives, assuming it does, and I assume there are a lot of bright people working to make it happen, when it arrives, it's going to look a lot different than nuclear power as we know it today. Could you paint a picture of what that might look like?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the one thing that's going to be probably different is the regulatory framework. So fusion right now will be regulated in the U.S. as an accelerator, or as a hospital where you have some small isotopes. So that's one different thing. But in terms of energy delivery, I think for fusion, you don't have a long-lived radioactive material that you have to store. But for example, we'll be using deuterium and tritium. And tritium, is a little bit radioactive. So we have to worry about that, and we have to be honest about it, how much of it is going to be. And we're going to have to talk to communities. We cannot just go and put in a power plant in a community. You have to talk to the community. What is the impact is going to be on their economy, or the impact from the environment side? But we don't foresee any huge problems, because as you mentioned, fusion is not a chain reaction, so there is no way you can have a meltdown. I mean, it's really hard to get the fusion started. At one time, you only have like 1 gram or a few milligrams of fuel in your chamber. So if you stop the fuel, everything stops.
And in terms of waste, the volume is significantly less, and the life of the waste is too. It's not thousands of years. Is that correct?
It depends what you use for your chamber material. But you're right, it's confined to that chamber, so it's smaller volume area. So the material of the chamber is not determined yet. There are people who are going to use steel, some beryllium, so it's still being debated, or blankets and so on. But the amount that you have to worry about in terms of the chamber is orders of magnitude smaller than what you have in fission.
Parallel to the work that's being done on fusion, there's new technology emerging on small modular reactors of conventional nuclear technology. Do you see that emerging ahead of fusion or in parallel? And if you come back in a time machine 50 years from now, do you think they'll be both out there? What will be the winning technology?
I don't think we're going to have a winning technology. I think we're going to need all the above approach, because, if you look at the energy demand or the energy increase, so you can look just at GDP per capita. For every 1% you increase it, you will need a 1% or 1.5% increase in energy. So by 2050, our energy demand is going to be huge. And, just solar by itself, or wind or nuclear, we're going to have a mix to meet the current demand and the demand for the future. So I think it's going to be very hard if we don't have another, nuclear energy from fission, I think that it's going to be very hard to meet the demand.
So anyone listening to this conversation probably knows by now that you have an interesting accent, and you and I were chatting ahead of the broadcast, that you're from Morocco. You spent your undergraduate years learning in Moscow, and then you came to the United States to get your PhD. Talk a bit about the world pursuit of fusion, and where the United States stands. Because we have ITER outside of Marseille in Cataraqu, France, where you have Koreans and Japanese and European countries in India, as well as the United States and others. So it's a global race, really, to develop fusion. How would you assess the U.S. role in that global effort?
Yeah, just for a reference, so for the magnetic fusion side, the word tokamak, it's a really Russian acronym. So the tokamak were invented and started in Soviet Union in the 1970s. And basically, the world basically started building these tokamaks. This was really the main kind of fusion device that was pursued throughout the years. And there are a lot of them throughout the world, even some in the U.S., some other countries. So Ether is the biggest one of them all. So the private sector is very active. So the some of them, they are in the inertial area, some in magnetic area, some in between. Some of them are complex, some are simple. But in terms of inertial fusion energy, I think the U.S. is the leader because of the ICF program. For the magnetic fusion, we lead in certain areas and we don't lead in certain areas. That's why, you know, it's a really an international, you know, adventure. So fusion is so challenging. It's a very hard problem. And you're going to need domestic and international collaboration to advance it.
So I really want to spend the last few minutes bringing you back to what Tammy Ma said. At the end of 4 years, we could lay out a promising path forward. What do you think that's going to look like in 4 years? Will you be briefing utilities? Will you be where will you be going at that point?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that's what Tammy meant, Tammy Ma. I think really that what we are hoping for the hubs in 4 years is to give us a clear picture which inertial fusion approach we can pursue. Just within fusion, inertial fusion, there is like five or six approaches. One using lasers, one uses heavy iron, and one using pulse power. And just within lasers, there's like three or four. So hopefully within 4 years, we're going to have some evidence and some data so we can really make decisions to focus the program into the next step so that we can build something after that.
So it would be demonstration at that point still. It's not commercial technology.
Yeah, so for now, it's just we are doing foundational science and technology because, you know, we're just getting started in IFE. We never had an IFE program in the U.S., so we're just getting started.
Kramer, if I could ask, how old are you?
I'm about 50.
You're about 50?
Yeah.
Do you think by the time you're 75, there'll be commercially operating fusion reactors in the United States?
Well, I mean, this is a really tricky question because it depends what you mean by it. If you mean that we're going to have a pilot plant that we can, let's say, demonstrate all the whistles and bells and whistles for fusion and you can run it for a few hours, or are you talking about having something that delivers electricity to the market, to a power plant, or are you saying we're going to have 50% of it wide? So these are different. But I'm very hopeful that, you know, we need fusion. It's a really, if we need it, it's not, if not for us, we need it for future generations. So we're going to have to solve this problem. We might as well go at it right now.
So again, do you think in a decade we're going to have commercial plants out there, or is it too hard to say at this point?
It's very hard to say. So there are some private companies who they are building some devices, coming with fusion. They're going to turn one device in 2025, 26, and the next one in 2032 that will deliver electricity. There's Helion, which actually they are promising to have something by 2028, and they have a contract to sell electricity to Microsoft already. And there are other that go as far as 2050, some at 2035. So we'll just have to wait and see.
So lastly, I want you to talk about your personal fascination with this technology. You're sitting in Washington, is that correct?
Yes.
And you are overseeing programs in California, in Colorado, in New York, Rochester, New York. How will you be on the road visiting these, rolling up your sleeves, and how excited are you by what this $42 million is going to put in place?
Yeah, I'm very excited with the initial investment. As I said, we never had an IFE program, and it's going to be very coordinated. We're going to bring people together, all the stakeholders, and we're going to have a plan how to move forward. And I do have in my field, I'm just very lucky that I do have some of the brightest talent in my field, including the Andy Kreutzer that you mentioned and Tammy Ma, some bright young scientists that will move this forward.
Okay. And just to make sure we're on the same page, IFE, inertial fusion energy, is what we're talking about.
Yes. So there is inertial fusion energy and there is inertial confinement fusion, and they are different.
Okay. Thank you, Kramer. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Marty.
We've been talking with Kramer Ackley, who's program manager for the Department of Energy's Fusion Energy Sciences. And for our purposes, he manages the Government Inertial Fusion Energy Science Project. Thanks for listening to Grid Talk, a production of the U.S. Department of Energy's Office of Electricity. We regularly convene conversations with thought leaders in the fast-changing electric sector in America and around the world. Please send us feedback or questions at gridtalk@nrel.gov. And we encourage you to give the podcast a rating or a review on your favorite podcast platform. For more information about this series, now in its fourth year, or to subscribe, please visit smartgrid.gov.
Thanks for listening to Grid Talk, presented by the U.S. Department of Energy Office of Electricity Advanced Grid Research Division. Subscribe through your favorite podcast provider or visit smartgrid.gov for more information.